Okay, let's get started. Hi, this is Talking American Studies. I'm Verena Adamik.
And I'm Anja Söhnmeis.
And we're podcasting from the University of Potsdam.
Now, before we get started, I first want to apologize for the sound quality of this episode. Due to the rise in COVID-19 outbreaks, we had to make do with an online interview, and even though we all did our best, the sound quality is not up to our usual standard. I am sorry about this, but I can promise you that the quality of the contributions by our guests does definitely make up for it. And I also want to add a short note on our time frame for this episode, because we recorded this before the US-American election, but in the full knowledge that we would upload it after Election Day. So, as we are recording this, we have no idea what you, dear people of the future, know about the state of the USA as you are listening to this.
Nonetheless, the episode hopefully speaks to ongoing discussions about democracy and about American studies in Germany. I think it's safe to say that we have an unusual episode for you. Previously, we mostly focused on research projects. This time, we offer an insight into the workings of a faculty community, as we have interviewed members, students and professors of the Humboldt-Universität Berlin.
Why? This summer, the American Studies Department of the HU had an online town hall meeting titled Outrage in America and Elsewhere, Structural Racism, Resistance and Responsibilities, The Situation in the US and Germany. Tao Ho, who was one of the organizers, asked Talking American Studies to attend, and we, of course, were more than happy to do so.
We are excited to offer you a follow-up of this channel meeting and have our guests Talking American Studies by discussing university culture and policies and the history and the responsibilities of our discipline. Without further ado, here's our guests.
Okay, hi, I'm Elaha Hashemi Yekani. I am a professor of English and American Studies with a special focus on postcolonial studies. I'm teaching both in the American Studies programs and in the English Literature Master as well.
Yeah, hi, I'm Emma Kimmel. I'm in my third semester in the Americanistic Master's program at the HU.
I am Nisreen Habib. I'm a student at HU, Humboldt University, Berlin. Originally, I'm from Syria. I'm doing a master's degree in American Studies. And previously, I studied 2 years in gender studies also at Humboldt University.
My name is Martin Klepper, and I'm professor for American Literature and Culture at the Humboldt Universität in Berlin.
Police brutality in the USA, directed against people of color, black people specifically, has gained worldwide media attention once again this summer, thanks to the protests following the killing of George Floyd at the hands of white police officers. Sadly, this case is but one in many that Black Lives Matter had to pillory since its founding 6 years ago. If you have not already informed yourself, we would direct you towards the Black Lives Matter homepage, and we will also link some podcasts on the topic in the show notes and on our webpage.
The violence, counter-protests, and negative media responses with which protesters were met illustrate a deep division in the USA, which runs along the color line, but also often along party lines. Anti-black policies have deep historical roots in the USA, and this is something that American studies can address and should address, and that scholars have addressed. At the same time, the discipline itself is shaped by a white bias, a class bias, and by a national framework, a national way of thinking. And of course, we are not only onlookers on anti-black discrimination in the USA, because racism permeates German police departments, the general discourse and does not stop at academia. All the more reason to address these topics in American studies departments and give a range of members within that community the chance to participate in debates on these topics.
Of course, holding open debates is generally always a good idea. But let's hear from our interviewees why they wanted to join the town hall meeting.
I was just really interested in seeing what the program had to say about George Floyd's murder and the Black Lives Matter movement in the States. It feels quite personal for me also because I am from the States. We study everything that's going on in the US, especially racism. And then I was really eager to have conversations about things that were happening right in the moment and how we could be of support and how we can also critically reflect on ourselves. So that's why I joined.
Thank you. And then Martin, how about you?
Yeah, well, as Emma said, the immediate trigger was the murder of George Floyd. But of course, there had already been a legacy of police brutality and killings. But we knew within the staff of American Studies at HAU that we wanted to do something. And what was really important to me is that we don't just publish a statement or put something on our website, but that we include students and staff and whoever from the sphere of the Humboldt University wants to join to talk about it. And it seemed to me that a town hall meeting is the best way to open a space for everybody to say what they think and maybe also to come up with ideas what we could do. And the idea behind the whole thing was, of course, that this is not just about the United States of America. This is also about American studies. It is also about Germany, about the situation in Germany, about incidents everywhere.
So there were these substantial issues to be addressed. But such meetings also foster democratic practice, or the practice of democratic practice in general.
I also think that, you know, hopefully coming out of this at some point, it will also be important to again foster formats where we have a, you know, the ability to debate with each other live in a room. And yeah, I think this is going to be, I don't know, maybe a bit of a shock to all of us to sort of return to these spaces.
There are certain rights in the law to debate or to express the political opinion freely. But since I've been here in Europe, in Berlin, I was like questioning people when they have such rights. I would expect more like debates or channels, especially in the at the university. Like, I was questioning myself why we don't have different channels where we can have these democratic debates between, like, as students or with the staff, or talking about critical or sensitive issues related to our situations or how we are facing racism.
Having discussions and deciding on action is therefore not something that only politicians should do. Yet, of course, they often shape how we think about the state of democracy. At the time of the interview, we were already well into the hot phase of Trump versus Biden, which inevitably led to the question about debate culture and debate formats in light of the 2020 election campaigns.
One of the things that I think, you know, we're hearing time and again is this sort of lamentation about the breakdown of dialogue, right? And this is something that I think we witness globally. So I think it's not only, you know, even the, you know, the supposedly democratic nations in Europe and the States and so forth, all of those currently are struggling with, you know, democratic discourse and how do we do this. So the televised debates, to a certain degree, have also been the marker of the limitations of the town hall, right? So we could really question how much is anyone really engaging with each other in a meaningful manner if they're just, you know, yelling towards the camera and not, you know, not ever really responding to anything. what's interesting to me when I watch these, if I can bring myself to do it, I think it feels like a lot of the debate about these really quite staged spectacles until now is really sort of delegated to social media. So it becomes really a weird way in which sort of the more traditional medium of TV is now kind of complemented by the live online interaction. And, you know, this can create obviously great memes and responses. And I think we all enjoyed the buzz around the fly on Pence's head, excuse my pun. But I think we also see the immense dangers of this kind of mediated democracy, right? So especially coming from a president who communicates messages of hate and disinformation via Twitter.
I think you can destroy every format, right? You know, if Trump organizes a town hall meeting, forget it, right? I mean, he can destroy every format. And then it's not useful anymore. So I think every democratic instrument or every tool for discussion and debate is precarious and can be destroyed or can even be instrumentalized for bad things.
Trump can destroy anything. It sounds like a dubious superpower.
Yeah, but I also think, and I think we see that right now. That's what I think what we're also worried by is that, you know, this right now, this desire of many people for authoritarianism, you know, whether it's in the United States, the Trump fans, you know, we want to have a strong, decided president who tells everybody off. But also, of course, in Hungary, in Poland, in very many countries, not to forget Germany and the AfD, there is right. I think, you know, democracy and a community in which people listen to each other and try to be sensitive about each other is a very precarious thing, and I think we need to kind of to recall that to our minds and think about how we can protect that. Yeah. I think that's very important, and it's very difficult, but it's a key to the future.
And while we are on the topic of being sensitive about each other, if you ever have to hear the annoying argument that hate speech and disrespectful behavior are free speech, you can just play them back the following impromptu lecture by Ilahi.
This is really quite a fundamental problem of the notion of the diversifying of the democratic discourse, as you put it in your question, right? Because I think if part of this conversation includes the devaluation and dehumanization of other people, and, you know, I would argue white supremacist thinking and anti-trans legislation, for instance, does exactly that, you know, then I don't think we should expand our notions of polite debate to accommodate ever more radical ideas. Really, this kind of disguise of standing up to so-called cancel culture and political correctness, under this kind of disguise, we really see truly undemocratic messages re-enter the realm of civil discourse. And, you know, I think this is a true danger to a sort of a democratic discourse that we want to foster, right? And so, I would argue, you know, we would have to oppose this quite rigorously instead of saying we always have to expand the realm of, you know, what can be said and what should be said and what should be debated. And again, I mean, in Germany here, we supposedly value academic freedom, but I think it's also our responsibility to stand up against the buzzword alternative facts and, you know, call them out as unscientific and often driven by deeply undemocratic impulses, right? So I think in this notion of what counts as valuable political discourse, I think we have to also set limitations, and those limitations begin where we question the humanity of other people, right?
Many of the buzzwords, such as fake facts, that influence our Twitter feeds, our news, our day-to-day way of talking, or not talking about politics in Germany, came to us through US-American news, debates, and so on. So, does then having the US as a research subject come with certain responsibilities?
Yeah, I definitely think that American studies has a responsibility, because I think an American studies program, or just, I don't know, books, whatever, like American studies that isn't critical, I think just can really easily slip into being like propaganda. I think we have to see the US as a whole. And a large part of that is racism. I would never say that racism is a uniquely American thing, but the United States is in a unique place where it is a young country comparative to the rest of the world, and political, economic foundations are rooted in racism and colonialism. And I think it's really important to address that and study how it's continued today. I mean, like I said, racism isn't a uniquely American thing. And I think that is a problem if someone were to study American studies and think that it was only an American thing.
Martin, would you like to add or continue this train of thought?
Yeah, sure. I mean, just as Emma said, yes, I think academics have an obligation to challenge the homogeneity of the student staff body in terms of ethnicity and race, but also, of course, in other directions like social situation, class, and so on, which is a big problem in Germany, as we all know. And also, yes, to does American studies bring something specific to the table to do that? Does it evoke certain expectations? And does it also afford certain tools? I think all of that has to be answered with yes. American studies has a tradition of discussing race and also racism. So yes, I think especially in American studies, that topic is on the table, and that gives us opportunities. I think all of us here also know that German academia has a problem with activism and perhaps with political issues in general. The traditional idea of the German academia, at least traditional since the 1950s, 1960s, is that academia is about, you know, in quotation mark, academic studies about contents. It's not about activism, and it shouldn't be political. I mean, I think most of the people today in the discipline wouldn't sign a statement like that anymore, but it's still somewhere there. And it's always there in German academia at large, if we're talking about other disciplines. You know, I think one has to distinguish between American studies in the States and American studies here in Germany, because in the States, of course, it was some of the more progressive people within literature and within the history department who founded American studies. So, I mean, in the beginning, they weren't necessarily activists, but F.O. Matheson, they were interested in a critical tradition, in a democratic tradition, and they were more progressive in terms of also looking at popular culture, looking at cultural phenomena and cultural aspects such as race, class, and gender, while at the time in the 1910s, 1920s in the States, literature and history were very conventional disciplines who were looking at great authors doing formal studies, or were looking at the history of governments and the history of, again, in quotation mark, great people. They called themselves liberal, a liberal, and for the time, progressive crowd that founded American studies. But in Germany, of course, what you were referring to, it's correct that American studies was, after the war, founded more as a kind of outreach of the American government to foster democracy in Germany after the Nazi time. And it had a very kind of official look. And that has, of course, slowly changed, but that is one legacy. But I also want to say one thing. One has to understand, I think, that this resistance against being political is not only something reactionary and negative, because after the 1920s and 30s, there was, of course, also the attempt to avoid this polarization that people constantly have to say, whether they're either communists or fascists, and engage in fights and to return to a sort of rationality in the positive sense. So there was something understandable about this depoliticization. It's just that, you know, I mean, everything can fossilize and everything can become the opposite of what it set out to be. So with the time, it has become a kind of a refusal to talk about politics and society. And of course, that was challenged in 68 and the following years. And I also think that it's that tradition of active engagement and active critical thought that we should kind of hook on to.
I thought it was really interesting what Professor Klepper said a little bit ago about this like tension between the university and students, between activists, because I've seen that quite a bit in my time in the US and just what I've heard from friends. And speaking for me personally, I think like my bachelor studies program radicalized me a lot by these different topics that I learned. For example, it wasn't until my university where I learned that Japanese Americans were put in internment camps. Hmm. And I grew up in the Pacific Northwest. I went to the Puyallup Fair, and those fairgrounds like were camps at one point. And none of us learned about that in high school or even before that. And I remember that being one moment of many that really radicalized me. And I think it's interesting, this like, on one hand, people often or some people become radicalized through the university. But then on the other side, I've seen instances where universities don't want students to be so radical that they change structures. Like they help radicalize activists. And then there's this tension that's created between activists who then want change based off of the information that radicalized them, and then the old structures and norms from the university and that it doesn't want to change.
Emma just pointed out a dissonance between the knowledge taught at universities and the practices in the institutions themselves, something that Elahe also elaborated on regarding academic careers specifically.
Yeah, I mean, if I can respond to that, I think on the one hand, and I think Nisreen has also highlighted this, topics such as race, gender, and sexuality, and of course, intersectionality, have been on the syllabi of American studies programs for a long time, right? So we address these issues of representation and racism in our teaching. We might learn about affirmative action and other tools that have been employed mainly in the US. And as you already mentioned this idea of exceptionalism, I think at the same time, there is also a danger in somehow limiting these topics to the United States. And I think American studies in Germany increasingly is becoming aware that this is also a problematic aspect, right? To sort of to project the issues of race and racism only onto the US territory and being, you know, somewhat too self-congratulatory about our own, you know, supposedly progressive standing as the ones who've been dealing with these issues in our teaching, right? So I think there's really an importance here to also to think about who's speaking, right? And I'm also maybe thinking about the 2019 edited collection, Who Can Speak and Who Is Heard, that was edited by Mahmoud Aravan, Nicole Hirschfelder, Luvena Kopp, and Katharina Motyl, which also problematizes this, I think, that in the past it was often white academics who could build careers on becoming so-called experts in certain fields, while academics of color are still very often not received as experts, but merely as sort of personally affected in German. We have this Betroffenen, perspective. This is something that in American studies in Germany is really something where we need to shift the conversation. And I think for those of you who are sort of following the debates around the diversity roundtable of the DGFR and the many sort of active early career researchers, I think they're doing a great job of making themselves heard and also challenging the status quo. There was also some debate among us, initially only the faculty, but then also with the students, of course, in the town hall meeting, because things like statements of solidarity can also easily have quite a self-serving tinge to them, right? And some staff and students also rightfully, I think so, highlighted that they needed time to grieve and deal with exhaustion, right? Especially students of color who have, you know, who've not only started now in the wake of maybe, you know, about this resurgence of politically visible protests, but have been doing this in different contexts for a long time, right? So I think we also need to acknowledge that for some people, you know, this is not a new thing at all, but has been shaping, you know, their lives and their work for a very, very long time. If anything, I think it's our shared and entangled history which positions us, you know, all differently in relation to the histories of racism and colonialism. But it also means that it is a shared responsibility to address these issues, right? The fight against racism is not just the task of those who are affected by it. And, you know, in the town hall, I think I tried to highlight that it is often Black and, you know, early career researchers of color who invest so much time and energy in fighting injustices that they then at times do not find enough time to look after their own qualifications.
Which leads us straight to this question. What strategies could be implemented to encourage diversity and democracy within German academia?
I do think one thing that would be cool to kind of continue this maybe energy of a town hall meeting would to have a space that students could physically sit in and gather together to kind of continue this sense of community.
To recruit more professor of color, to have more diverse staff in the university, and to think also why the students of color are they are less represented in the classes. And this means like to dig more in the bureaucratic and the structures or the applications and what are the challenges for certain groups of students to be enrolled in such programs. And something that can be done immediately is like to have more spaces for the students. And I mean here physical spaces, rooms, places where we can meet and have discussions about texts, about curriculum, about activism. And where we can establish our own events.
You know, one of the things that I actually also took out of the town hall meeting is that I believe that it's often not necessarily the fact that we have too few specific strategies that need implementing, but I think one of the things that I really noticed, and I, you know, I'm also speaking here from personal experience, is that often if you do not come from a background of familiarity with certain structures, you're much less likely to take advantage of certain opportunities that are actually already in place, right? So, you know, I am now in my role as a professor. I'm also a Vertrauensdozentin for the Studienstiftung in Germany. And, you know, I can clearly say that, you know, despite having grown up in Germany and attending German schools, I was not aware that such opportunities ever existed, right? And it was only really after I started my PhD that I learned a lot more about sort of many unspoken academic rules. And I think it's really important that we address such unequal access to information that I feel it's not only the question of which formats do we need, but how do we match the formats that are existing with the people who need access to those things the most.
I think that feminist attempts in earlier times have been very successful by institutionalizing their demands through women's representative, Frauenbeauftragte, and also the necessity of the departments to report on their progress. And I would like to have that also in terms of diversity or diversities, you know, social diversity, but also diversity in terms of race and so on.
From university departments to the broader scope of American studies.
I mean, personally, if I think about research, I'm really interested in diasporic archives and the ways in which artists sort of queer the narratives of national belonging. So this is something I'm very keen on pursuing more in my, you know, research and teaching. And, you know, I keep hearing certain things that I also do know that, you know, people have also gone through in the 70s and the 90s, right? We're repeating a lot of these things. And so I think it's really, really interesting to revisit some of the stories, right? And, you know, again, if we're talking about currently refugees in Germany, right? We have a long, you know, history of migration to this country, and we have different histories of these different migrations. This is really something that I find is interesting. And I think the sort of second more structural thing that I would like to see challenged a little bit more, I think, is that especially in Germany, in our sort of disciplinary understanding, we're still very, very invested in this notion of canonical knowledge and training academics who can supposedly represent the entire discipline.
I would love to see, like, since most of like the main topics in the American studies at HAU, I don't know about other universities, is about post-coloniality and transnational, transatlantic experiences and literature. So I would like to see more contribution from authors, text professors who are coming from these areas. Like not just to read about what's happening now in some African countries or Asian countries after colonial phases or post-colonial, but also have more contributions from them. And the same for the students, like to have more students from like different contexts, different countries who relate to such topics. And to take into account, again, that not all the students can have benefits from what, for example, American Studies Department sometimes offers for students, for example, traveling to other countries.
First, I would say what I would like to see in the future in American studies is a little bit more self-confidence and self-assertiveness about our topic, because I seem to see very often that people in American studies seem to feel the need to apologize for what we're doing. You know, yes, we're still talking about race, class, and gender. Yes, we're still kind of political. And I think we do not need to apologize about that. And American studies has always done that. And I think it needs to carry that over into the future about our self-understanding. What is American studies? How do we integrate all the important questions that we have today from, you know, social issues, inequality in society, the class issue in the United States, and also, of course, the rest of the world, inequality, social problems, health problems. We're not talking about Corona, but also the opioid crisis that right now nobody seems to talk about anymore. Also, environmentalism. We still have a climate crisis, right? I mean, we still need to somehow not only see the Fridays, but every day for the future. But also, of course, still questions about LGBTQ plus perspectives and race. And I think we just continuously need to engage in the question, how do we bring all of these different perspectives together? How can one do that? Because it's a lot of work. It takes a lot of time to study all of that. What are our methodologies? And I think American studies needs to continue talking about that and to do that in a very self-confident way.
Well, actually, where I ended up, I decided to go big, maybe not realistic, but, you know, go big or go home. And it was similar to what Professor Klepper just said at the end there. I would love there to be this new department that is like an interdisciplinary studies, like critical social studies department. I mean, at the HAU, they're tends to be an overlap between American studies and gender studies often. Yeah, I guess I would just want there to be like a big college of like critical studies so that you could even go deeper into like your specific interests and that there would just be more classes.
And while we are on the topic of dreaming,
we have this question in the podcast about who would you want to discuss your research with? But since this episode will be about town halls and discussion, cultures of discussion, debate in university, I thought I'd tweak it a bit. So my final question would be, if you could invite one person to the next town hall, alive or dead, who would it be?
I already picked my figure, Ilahi. Shall I start?
Yes, go ahead, please.
Actually, I was thinking of Audre Lorde. I know, like, she's dead, but because really I was really influenced with everything I read from her writings, poems, and especially when it comes to differences. So we are not like now talking about differences because we want to say that we are just different people. And there's like her famous quote, like, it's not our differences that divide us. It's our inability to recognize, accept, and celebrate those differences. Mm-hmm. So I would imagine Audre Lorde in such political momentum do these discussions and have these powerful speeches and try to make a lot of solidarity between different groups around in different places.
That's a good pick.
That is a good pick. And it does not come as a surprise to me. She was also high on my list, and I, I fully expected almost all of us saying this. So I refrained from hers, and I was actually a bit overwhelmed with this question. And so I think thinking more about the upcoming elections and the whole political situation, for some reason, I thought Ruth Bader Ginsburg. So I thought that, you know, her loss has shocked us, but also sort of strengthened the spirit of resistance. So, you know, I just felt that she had become, or she has become, such an icon of productive dissent. And I think this is really something that we need. Maybe also a bridge between different generations. And again, you know, this is not to say that she was infallible. And I know people have also criticized many of her decisions and so forth. But I just would imagine that she could be a lively contributor to any debate. And so, someone who could maybe provide some political hope in this very strange year.
I mean, I think it's difficult because it's like, how do you pick one singular person? But I would probably say Angela Davis, because A, she's really cool and I would love to meet her someday. And B, she's had experience of doing like grassroots organizing and working within the university. And she's so unbelievably intelligent. So I would love to have her there.
I'm very grateful to Emma that she opened the way to have two answers because W.E.B. Du Bois is so big here in our department because he studied at the Humboldt University. If I could choose a dead person, I would love to listen to him, what he thinks about today's situation in the world and today's situation about race and racism and things like that. So that would be my dead pick. And two people we discussed in, or I discussed in the last semester when in one class would be, for example, Ocean Vuong, but also Ta-Nehisi Coates. I would love to talk to them and ask them questions.
So we hope you found this episode as inspiring as we found the interview, and that you might also find ways to have debates and evoke change, despite the lockdown. And we wanted to stress that one of the ideas behind this podcast was to provide a low-threshold insight into American studies for aspiring academics. So maybe you can share it with your students and all your peers.
Let me end this episode by once again thanking our interviewees for taking their time and talking to us. And I also want to thank Professor Nicole Waller, as always, for supporting us. Finally, I want to stress that I am very grateful to Anya for doing this episode with me.
The pleasure was all mine.
If you have any comments, queries, or suggestions, Talking American Studies is on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and can be reached via email under talkingamericanstudies@posteo.net. Don't forget to add the podcast to your lists, or click it, or like it, or follow it, or share it, and check out our other episodes. We are on various podcast platforms such as Spotify, iTunes, Google Podcasts, and some more, which I lost track of right now. Or go to our current homepage, talkingamericanstudies.buzzsprout.com. We do hope you enjoyed this episode and that you will listen in again.
Bye! Bye.
We would direct you towards the Black Lives Matter homepage, and we will... Oh, I know, I'll get it together.
Politicians should practice. You should not. Could I say sheesh? Only something that polish it.